We're doing Mishlei, we're up to the 25th chapter, the 11th Pasuk. tonight I have the honor of learning with my mother present. No. The truth is, it's funny that we do so much Tanakh tonight, because as our bedtime stories, my mother would always read us the Tanakh. So the foundation for everything we're learning was as bedtime stories and everything else. So it's nice to be learning again together. The Pasuk Yudalev is one of the famous Pasukim in Mishlei. It happens to be the Pasuk with which the Rambam begins his guide to the perplexed. And we're going to read the Pasuk with a tune and then translate and explain. Tapuchei zahav v'maskiyot kasef davar davur alofnav. Tapuchei zahav, if you have gold apples, v'maskiyot kasef, covered with an encasing of silver. So when a person looks at it from a distance, all he sees is the silver. When you get a close look, you can see that beneath the silver there was really gold. And this is a reference to daval, davur alofnav, something that's said in its proper time, in its proper way. Just like something said in its proper time is fitting, so too it's fitting that when you have a gold apple, you make a silver encasing for it. Like sometimes you have jewelry. Where do you put jewelry? Put it in a nice box. Things that are precious, we give them a precious encasing as well. Tapuchei zahav, if you have golden apples, you put them in maskiot kasef, in a silver encasing. Just like this is the concept of why we buy a silver case for the esrog. We're showing that this isn't just a lemon, this is something treasured. This is a pri etz hadav. So, tapuchei zahav, gold apples, v'maskiot kasef, when they're in silver encasings, that's an allegory to daval davur alofnav, something that's said in its proper time, in its proper fashion. You'll notice that in Mishlei we've been talking a lot about the way people speak. And speech is really something which can connect and could sever ties. It's interesting that speech connects between us, but speech also is how we get educated. Most of good education is we talk, we learn what we're doing now. Rashi, throughout the Tanakh, very often Rashi quotes this part of the Pasuk. Daval davur alofnav. I'm only here to tell you pshat, to make everything fit together. Everything fit with the context. Rashi often quotes the end of the Pasuk. It's also interesting to note, in modern Hebrew, we have the word tapuz. What's a tapuz? An orange. Why is tapuz an orange? It's a shortening of tapuach zahav, very good. Like Reuven said, tapuach zahav. What's tapuach zahav? A golden apple. And it's funny that the source, the only place in Tanakh, as far as I recall, that says tapuach zahav is here. Here in Mishlei. And in Mishlei, he was talking to literally golden apples, tapuach zahav. If you have a golden apple, you make it a silver encasing. Pasuk yud bet. Nezem zahav. V'chalichatem mochiach chacham al ozen shoma'at. Nezem zahav, just like a gold nose ring. V'chalichatem, and together with it you have another ornament. Ketem throughout Tanakh is an ornament, it's a jewel. So when you wear both of them together, so it looks nice. It's like a if you wear a necklace and earrings, it goes well together. They complement one another. So, by the same token, mochiach chacham, if someone gives intelligent tochacha, and it falls upon ozen shomat, an ear that's willing to hear. Because if you have intelligent things that are said to someone that's not willing to hear, then there's something missing. If you have someone willing to hear, but what's being said, there's also something missing. But when you have the two together, intelligent things being said, an intelligent person, so then they complement one another, and that's nezem zahav, just like a golden nose ring, v'chalichatem, and other ornaments that complement one another. By the same token, these two complement one another. Kitzinat sheleg beyom katzir. Tzion ne'eman l'sholechav v'nefesh adonav yashiv. Before we explain the Pasuk, I want to quote to you a story that happened a few years ago. we had a volunteer organization, and we'd send a volunteer to do something, and he'd come back, and sometimes it was done, and sometimes it wasn't done. And sometimes 20% was done, 50% was done, 80% was done. We sent a guy, there was a person that had to be hospitalized, and they needed two bandages. The hospital didn't have long bandages. They needed two long bandages. So one volunteer says, I'll do it. I have exactly 20 minutes. I'll do it. The person was leaving for the hospital in 40 minutes. The guy runs. I give him my number. I tell him, if you have any questions from the store, call me back. Here's the money. Any questions, call me. Two bandages this size, and then bring it to the person. He runs. He comes back. He brings it. He tells me it's done. I tell him, did you get two? He says, no, I only got one. I said, didn't we say two? He says, you're right. I forgot. But right now I have to go. Okay, now we have 20 minutes left. Did he save me any work? None whatsoever. I still had to go to the store to get the other bandage. It made no difference to me if I got one or I got two. By the time I had to go, it's the same work. So I was a little frustrated. I spoke to someone who heads a different volunteer organization. And he told me, he said, when you send someone to do something in an organization, if you get 50%, you're doing great. 50% is amazing. Usually you don't even get 50%. So I was floored. We have a rule in halacha. We say, chazakah shaliach oseh shlichuto. We can assume that if we sent the messenger, he does what we sent him to do. We assume that people take responsibility, they fulfill it. And this has halachic implications. If I ask someone to set an eruv for me, I can travel assuming he set the eruv for me. I sent him out there, I asked him to place it there. I can assume he placed it there. If I come and I see it was eaten up, I can assume he placed it there on time. And in certain instances, I could even assume that animals ate it after Shabbos, and I could still rely that he placed it there on time. We have an assumption that people are responsible people. Shlomo HaMelech tells us over here, just like the cool of snow on a day of harvest, a person's harvesting, he's out in the sun. When you're harvesting a field, that means there's no shade, there are no trees. So the thing you want most is something cooling, like the cool of snow on a day of harvest. So too is tzir, a messenger who is ne'eman l'sholchav, who is trustworthy to the person who sends him. V'nefesh adonav yashiv, and he brings back the soul of the one who sends him, because what he relied on actually came to. Nesi'im v'ruach v'geshem ayin ishmit halel b'matat shakir. Like different forms of clouds. You see the day is getting cloudy, you see wind. Nesi'im, what's a nesi'? Nesi' is a cloud. Nesi' is also, the leaders are also called nesi'im because they're raised above the rest. But really, nesi' means uplifted, which means a cloud. Nesi'im, if you have clouds, v'ruach, and wind. V'geshem ayin, but no rain. So all day you're walking around with an umbrella and a raincoat and you think it's going to rain. And then it doesn't rain and you've been hoping it would rain for your crops. That's something that really lets a person down. He had good hopes, he had reason to have hopes, and then his hopes were dashed. By the same token, ish mitalel, a person who takes pride, b'matat shaker, in a gift that's a lie. He says, I'll give, and then he doesn't give. And this is, on Shabbos, we've give off alias for bids. People have to be careful. A person takes the responsibility to pay, he's got to pay. Shlomo HaMelech says, when you raise a person's hopes, a guy comes and says, I need A, B, or C, you tell him I'll do it, and then you don't, so that's worse than not having said anything in the first place. Be'erech apayim yefute katzin v'lashon rakah tishbor garim. If the katzin, the one in charge, gets upset at someone, and the response is a gentle response, so then he has to be seduced to talk more calmly. This is also a good tip for the home. Sometimes people yell, and if the response is a yell, so then it just escalates. But if the response is a calm response, so then it's very hard to keep yelling when the other side isn't yelling back. And we had a case not long ago where one person wronged someone else. And they said, okay, we're going to come and talk it out. So the guy who was wronged asked me, what do you suggest I do? I said, if you were wronged, my suggestion is that whatever happens, don't yell. So he said, but I was wronged, why shouldn't I yell? So I told him, you're right, you were wrong. The other guy did something terrible to you, you're 100% right. But here's what's going to happen. He's going to come in and he's under pressure because he knows he was wrong. So his tone is going to go up. Now, if your tone goes up just the same way his does, he feels like you're yelling at him. You're only yelling back, but in his mind, you're yelling, right? The second you yell, he feels more vindicated to yell, and at some point, reaches a point where he feels more legitimacy. You shouldn't give him any legitimacy. He's wrong, you're right. If you're right, you have nothing to yell about. So just, you could say the same things. You're hurt, you've been cheated, everything you want to say. But there's no reason to yell. And if you yell, to an extent, you could even lose. So if a person is the katzin, he's the one in charge, he's the boss, and he's coming in angry, and the response is not anger, but rather it's orech hapayim, a person who's long-winded, v'lashon rakah, in the soft-spoken word, tishbol garim, that can even break bones, which really means breaks the harshness of the anger. Should we do 5 more psukim or pause here? Yeah?
Sure.
Okay. Devash matzata echol dayeka pentis ba'enu vakeyoto. Dvash, what's dvash? Who knows? Oh, so he says honey, he says date honey. You're both right, but you should know that Rashi says that dvash is any sweet liquid. Rashi wants dvash to encompass sugar. Now sugar comes from a cane. And Rashi in Shir Shirim, when the pasuk says, Achalti ya'arin divshi, I ate the cane with the sugar. Well, if sugar is date honey, then there's no cane. And if sugar is bee honey, then there's also no cane. So Rashi says, in Erevin, in other places, Rashi says, dvash must mean any sweet liquid. Anything sweet, that's liquidy, that's dvash. So Shlomo HaMelech says, dvash matzata, if you found something sweet, if you found honey, so then, you found it, you could eat it, that's fine. But how much do you eat? Echol dayeka. Eat the amount you're supposed to. As much as you need, as much as is good for you. Pentis ba'enu, lest you satiate yourself eating more and more honey, and ultimately, va'keyoto, you'll vomit it. You'll throw it out. And this is, I think this is one of modern day's maladies. People have everything, and they eat everything, and then we have half the Western world overweight. Shlomo HaMelech says, you found something good, we're not telling you not to enjoy it. Enjoy it. You don't have to eat 3 steaks. You could eat 1 steak. With limitations. And we've often discussed that that's the theme of the Torah. Enjoy life in a holy way. A holy way is a balanced way. And going off this concept of being balanced with something that's sweet, Shlomo HaMelech gives us another tip. Hokar raglecha mi beit reyehecha ten yisvacha usneyecha. Make your feet precious in your friend's home. Supply and demand. If you supply yourself, you're a frequent guest at someone's home, so then he will be satiated from you, and just like we said earlier, you eat too much honey, you throw it up, so do you have a guest too often, eventually you get tired of him. So Shlomo HaMelech says, Hokar raglecha mi beit reyecha. Make your feet a rarity, make your feet something scarce, something precious, in your friend's home. Even though he's your friend, he likes having you over. Yeah, but everything's good in moderation, just like the honey. So, hokar aglecha mi beit reyecha. And this is a point that we have to bear in mind. Someone once wrote a guideline to someone coming to Israel for a year in yeshiva. They wrote guidelines how to be a good Shabbos guest. When guys tell me I have an adoptive family and I go there every Shabbos, I feel like telling them this pasuk. That's not fair. They like you. But how much do you like a person? How much do you like honey? It's good, they're your adoptive family, that's wonderful. But find yourself other families to go to. You shouldn't be there all bein hazmanim. You have 3 weeks, where are you going to be? By my adoptive family. And maybe they want to break too, but I'm like their family. Good, you're like their family. Give them time with the family without you who's like their family. Hokar raglecha, that's what Shlomo HaMelech says. Make your feet a rarity, something scarce, something precious in your friend's home. Penis b'acha, lest he be satiated of you, usneyecha, and he'll come to hate you. I think the pasuk is very succinct. The pasuk says it perfectly. Clear, yeah? Yeah.
Rabbi, does this also mean that you won't like go to your friend's house constantly, like normally, like go once in a while to visit?
Right. Well, sometimes by him, sometimes invite him to you. Have enough friends that you don't have to be there too often.
Where was this guy?
Huh? So someone wrote a guideline. I have to find out. And I think this is one important point. Have a few places to go. Don't go to the same place every Shabbos. Don't be at the same place all ben as manim. Even if they have a separate room for you. And even if they keep saying, no, we're happy you're here. What are they going to say? Yeah.
Rabbi, what if they want you to come to their house every Shabbat?
That's what I just said.
What if they force you to come to their house every Shabbat? That wasn't
good. So Shlomo HaMelech began the Pasuk with an interesting word. He said, make your feet precious in their home. Hokar aglecha. I guess maybe he was going to preclude that thought. Meaning, even if you'll say they're happy, even if you're not worried about the end of the Pasuk, but it's not precious anymore when you come. That much you have to agree with me. Make it precious. Make it something valuable. If a person's there every Shabbat, even if you'll say, I'm not worried they'll hate me, they're inviting me, they're initiating it. Okay, but still. But still, let's leave it as something precious. Let's have other options. Yeah?
Does Sunnah count as honey?
I guess, according to Rashi's definition, yeah. But if you quote this to people, they'll tell you you're wrong, unless you show them the Rashi inside. No one's going to believe you. So I have to find the Rashi to show you. It's not people think the Rashi is like you said, either date honey or bee honey. Mefitz v'cherev v'chitz shanun. These are different instruments that are used at war. I don't know exactly what the mefitz is, but it's what?
It's just translated as hamol.
I don't know what that is.
No, hamol, like, you know, like a dog will maul you. Like,
no, maul is like it's like a ball with spikes on it.
That's a mace.
Oh. Yeah,
maul or the ball that hits you like another guy.
No, you're right.
I don't know. Mefitz is some kind of weapon. Rashi also, I guess, didn't know, because Rashi just says Shem Klei Milchama. These are different weapons used at war. So, Cherev and Chetz, we know. Cherev is a sword, Chetz is an arrow. Shanun, that are sharpened. What is Shlomo HaMelech comparing to this? Ish one v'reyehu eid shaker. If someone testifies falsely against his friend. When you testify falsely, don't think, what did I do? I just said something. No. Shlomo HaMelech says that's all the weapons you could have at war. Mefitz, cherev, chetz, shanun. They're the sharpened weapons when you speak badly against someone when it's a lie. Shein ro'ah.
Can it also be truth and still be...
So he's not talking about the truth. I mean, he's talking about also testimony. He's talking about false testimony. I don't know...
Lashon Hara could be true.
Right. Lashon Hara, that's a different point, but that's not what he's saying here. Shein ro'ah v'regel mu'adet mivtach boged b'yom tzara. Just like shein ro'ah, just like the tooth as it's eating and the foot as it's walking, they destroy things. That's natural, that's normal for them. By the same token, Mivtach bogeid be'et tzara. If you have someone who you rely on and he's a traitor when you need him, so then it's like a tooth that as you're eating, the tooth breaks on you. And you thought you could eat and suddenly you lost the tooth. Or the foot that you assumed you could stand on and suddenly you fall. So a person also, again, Shlomo HaMelech is giving the responsibility. Don't think, what did I do? He could manage without me. Shlomo HaMelech says no. Just like a person can't manage without his foot and a person can't eat without his teeth, a person relies on them as he's eating and as he's walking. By the same token, if you made a pact with someone, he's relying on you. And if you're not there for him when you promised you'd be there, so that's you should realize it's just like a tooth or a foot. And this is, again, this is because people always assume that I didn't do anything too bad to the other person. Whenever we do something wrong, we find it very easy to say, well, what's the big deal? So Shlomo HaMelech is reminding us, no, it is a big deal. He relied on you. You have to be there for him because you gave him reason to rely on you. And Be'ezrat Hashem, next time we'll pick up over here, Pasuk Chaf.